Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
A win for farm workers in California. Down to the wire in Georgia. And today on the show, the iron workers talking safety and where construction is headed in the new year. Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, January 4th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up, get our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. We have two guests on the show today. We're going to kick things off with Steve Rank. Steve is no stranger to the show. He is executive director of safety and health for the iron workers, and their full title is the International Association of Bridge, Structural, Ornamental, and Reinforcing Iron Workers Union, and they're part of the AFL-CIO. Ironworkers.org is their website. Steve holds the position of executive director of safety and health for the International, and he is going to talk about an edict from the president, Eric Dean, who we're going to get on the show probably in a month or so. And this just came out a couple of weeks ago, dealing with safety certification for supervisors. And we'll get into the role of the supervisor foreman. There's a lot of certifications. I had a really good conversation with Steve yesterday talking about this to prep for the show. There's a lot of certification plans out there. And everybody has one. The Teamsters have one. The steel workers have one. The auto workers have one. And they're pretty much like a dime a dozen. And they're it's not one size fits all, but a lot of them are very, very similar. Well, this one is a little bit different. And Steve is going to talk about that and the importance of safety certification for the supervisors. Because think about this. When there is an accident on the job, and you know construction is a very dangerous industry, one of the most dangerous industries. In fact, our second guest, Tom Jermuskin, is going to talk about that. When there is an accident, there is usually a lawsuit, a court battle, and everybody is called to testify. And that's where all the details come out. And Steve is going to address that specifically right here on America's Workforce. Tom Jermuska Jr., editor of the Labor Citizen, produced by BMA Media, will be our second guest. And again, he's going to talk about safety on the job, what the 2021 economic forecast looks for the union construction industry. A lot of unknowns. Obviously, we're in the middle of this pandemic. Construction is deemed essential. A lot of workers have gotten sick. But nonetheless, projects are still moving forward. Apprenticeship programs, they were slowed down. Many of them run virtually. So we'll take a look. And it's going to be difficult, too, because of the unknowns that are out there. We're also going to take a look about the importance of the special election in Atlanta and how that will impact the Biden administration. We've been spending a lot of time on this in the last couple of weeks. And bottom line is, if the two Democrats win, then Mitch McConnell is no longer the Senate Majority Leader. And that could pave the way for a lot of good things in the Biden administration. AFL-CIO, I'll tell you, I've been doing this show for a long time. And you know, organized labor was really, really involved in the November election, without saying. It seems like they've doubled down. Let me give you an example of some of the things that happened here in the last week. Dozens of volunteers from North Carolina hit the streets of Savannah. This was last Wednesday for a canvas kickoff. The Bull City Votes, they call themselves, came from the Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina area to give one final push to get out the vote. The Georgia AFL-CIO has coordinated with groups from across the country throughout the runoff election to make sure every last eligible voter has the opportunity to make their voice heard. John Ossoff, the Democrat, joined the Amalgamated Transit Union's Ossoff-Warnock Express Bus at the train station in Atlanta. They call it the Five Points MARTA station. This was last Tuesday to discuss the importance of early voting and getting out the vote. The ATU Ossoff Warnock Express bus has been rolling across the state holding socially distanced rallies and other events in an all-out mobilizing effort. ATU Georgia bus drivers, train operators, and other transit workers are also flooding transit centers to encourage riders to get out and vote in this critical election. Also last week, more than 1,000 cooks, bartenders, servers, housekeepers, and concession workers held a car rally with the Reverend Raphael Warnock calling for change in the U.S. Senate. Speakers included President of the Georgia AFL-CIO, Charlie Fleming, and Atlanta North Georgia Labor Council President Jim Williams, with dozens of labor allies on the ground in attendance. Now, as the COVID-19 pandemic and related shutdown wear on, the Senate runoff has major implications for the lives and livelihoods of workers and their families, both in Georgia and throughout the country. And speaking of Fleming again, the president of the Georgia AFL-CIO, this is what he said yesterday. As we mark the end of this unprecedented year, I want to take a moment and thank each and every union member who has contributed to this campaign over the past several months. Whether you phone banked, sent postcards, or handed out literature, every single one of you made a real difference. That's why I know we're going to get this win tomorrow, because I've been watching it unfold in real time. Georgia's labor movement will never, ever forget this. That's Charles Fleming, head of the Georgia Labor Federation. For months, the Republican Senate stood in the way of relief legislation that would support workers, among them the 75% of Unite Here members in Georgia who remain jobless, Warnock said. I will change that and work to pass long-term, comprehensive COVID relief legislation that increases and includes job safety protections, economic relief, and health care. And when we recover from this pandemic, I will continue standing with Unite Here and the broader labor movement to support workers' fundamental rights and organize and work safely. He went on to say the amount of time it took for both Congress and the president to sign the most recent pandemic relief bill, and now the squabbling over the increasing of stimulus payments from $600 to $2,000 only underscores the need to end Republican control of the Senate. And one more here, the Coalition of Black Trade Unionists, the CBTU, is doing everything it can to make sure Georgians are fully mobilized during early voting. And that work is apparently paying off. The volunteers have made thousands of phone calls encouraging black voters to turn out strong during the early voting, and which is already ended. And of course, the election is tomorrow. They teamed up with the New Georgia Project, one of the many allies working to ensure as many people as possible are able to exercise their right to vote. Just examples there of what's happening in the state of Georgia. We can only wait for a positive outcome. And right now, the polls seem to indicate that Democrats are gonna win this one. Wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be cool? Oh, my gosh. A California state judge has issued a temporary restraining order against Foster Farms requiring the poultry processor to comply with COVID-19 safety protocols issued by the county health regulators after a previous coronavirus outbreak at a company facility in Central California, which sickened over 400 workers and caused 9 deaths. The order mandates that Foster poultry farms provide and require workers to wear face coverings, implement various social distancing and hygiene measures and other safety protocols, and institute screenings for all outside visitors. The restraining order, which went into effect last Monday, is believed to be the first of its kind to be imposed on a meatpacking company in connection with coronavirus safety measures. This according to the attorneys. During oral arguments held via Zoom, The Council for the United Farm Workers of America and two workers at Foster Farms Processing Plant asserted that the company failed to comply with the CDC prevention guidelines and the county health official's directive that Foster Farms implement proper safety precautions to protect its workers. Counsel for the company argued that the restraining order was not necessary because the company was already in compliance and the infection rate of employees had dropped to less than 1%. Well, at the end of the hearing, the judge, Donald J. Proietti, sided with the worker, saying he was concerned with the health and safety of plant employees amid a statewide shutdown order. This is what the judge said. It's an extraordinary time. This is not a case involving a good driver discount. This is a case involving the life and safety of citizens, residents, people who work and live in our community. The judge said the order represents the least restrictive court order that only requires Foster Farms to comply with health requirements to which it already agreed to. He turned aside the company's argument that the claims are preempted by the Federal Defense Production Act, a law under which President Trump designated back in April through executive order that meatpacking plants are a critical infrastructure amid the pandemic. The judge said the court is not going to simply abdicate responsibility and say, sorry, it's preempted. I don't believe that ordering Foster Farms to do what it agreed to do preempts this court from making that a part of the TRO, the temporary restraining order. An attorney for the workers, Monique Alonzo, said that they are quite satisfied with the ruling. She said, we're really pleased that the judge said we had enough evidence that they are not following county health orders or CDC guidelines. Somebody has to hold Foster Farms' feet to the fire, and the judge went ahead and did it. We're hopeful this will do the trick. Many of the workers are longtime employees. They show up. They want to do their jobs. They want to be safe, just like all of us. Also, got a comment here from Erica Navarrete. Erica is the vice president of the United Farm Workers. Erica said in a statement that the union will never stop fighting to prevent more unnecessary deaths and suffering caused by Foster Farms' failure to follow clear rules. The workers filed suit December 17th, asking the court to order Foster Farms to comply with the health department's August order, mandating the company institute testing protocols and other safety measures at its 2,600 worker facility. This is in Livingston, California, which had a June outbreak that infected 392 workers and led to 9 deaths and a 6-day plant shutdown in September. A second outbreak was declared by health officials December 3rd and remains ongoing, according to the workers' complaint. So hats off to the farm workers and all those who fought for the workers at Foster Poultry Farms. Took a judge and a court order to stop the madness there. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment with the iron workers coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook, and that's AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. Steve Rank. Steve is Executive Director of the Safety and health, safety and health for the iron workers. Iron Workers International, their website is ironworkers.org. Steve joined the iron workers back in the 1970s, and he's been at the International for almost 20 years, since 2002. And Steve, you're telling me off the air that you started college, was back in the 70s, and college just wasn't for you. And I've heard this story so many times. And unfortunately, a lot of them, they graduate and they still don't have a job, and then they go into the apprenticeship program. The beauty of the apprenticeship program is you earn while you learn. So maybe you can, before we get into the safety certification for supervisors, maybe you can tell our audience about how that changed your life. I mean, college just wasn't for you, and maybe you can explain how you transition into the trades. Go ahead.
The year was 1976, and I went to college after high school. My father was an executive for Reynolds Aluminum and wanted me to follow into his footsteps. Well, after about a year of school, I just thought life was bigger. I liked working with my hands. So when I dropped out of school and left this university in Missouri, it was a huge disappointment to my father. But I found an iron worker on a job site, and his name is Ron Delena. And Ron said, "We've been working shorthanded all summer. Hang around here. I'm going to take you down to the hall and see if I can't get you a permit to work." Ron took me down, got me a permit. I loved the work. It is hard work. The iron workers were funny guys to work with. They had great skill, and I could see that. So that attracted me. And then I got accepted into the iron workers apprenticeship program 2 years later. And that was the very beginning of my learning in the classroom, as well as learning how to be a good iron worker on the job site. So it was a big transition from a scholastic upraising to going into the iron workers union.
Yeah, I'm looking at the website. You take a look at the history of the iron workers, and it goes back to the late 1800s, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that there used to be wood construction in a lot of the buildings, and that shifted over to metal, and then they obviously started a new trade, and today there's 120,000 members in North America, and the projects that the iron workers were a part of include the Golden Gate Bridge. I mean, you say the Golden Gate Bridge, everybody knows the Golden Gate Bridge, the Sears Tower, the St. Louis Arch, the oil sands plant expansion in Alberta, the World Trade Center, and Freedom Tower. Did you work on any of those projects? You were telling me that you did a lot of traveling. I mean, where did it take you? What kind of projects did you work on?
Well, my first big projects was going to Houston, Texas, when they had the big boom in the early 1980s. They couldn't find enough iron workers to build the high rises, the 68 stories, 75 stories, the 55 story buildings. So I loaded up. I lived in a school bus. That was my home. I went to Houston, Texas, and I lived right on the job sites. And it was great. It was a lot of action. They had over 7,000 to 9,000 iron workers working in Houston, Texas, in the downtown area. And they're called boomers. Whenever you boom out and you leave your hometown and go somewhere else, they call it booming out. And so that's what I did. And so I learned a lot building high-rise buildings. I didn't work anything that's notably popular like the Golden Gate Bridge, but I worked several high-rise buildings in downtown Houston and other places that I drive by them today, and it seems like yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. I bet you try to forget those times when you lived in the school bus, though, huh?
Oh, especially when it was over 100 degrees, and I went there at night, and it was just baking like an oven.
Jeez.
So wow. The guys on the job site would laugh, and they'd throw washers and some nuts down, and a couple guys did, and they'd put dents in the top of my bus. And so, but it was all good times.
And yeah, yeah.
I look back at that, and but I had an opportunity. I had an opportunity, despite the hardships of living in that bus in the summertime in Houston. I saw opportunity, and that's something
yeah.
I hope all young people out there realize is there's always an opportunity in the building trades, particularly the iron workers. We have one of the finest apprenticeship programs now that in the last 40 years has changed dramatically. And one of them is called the University of Iron in Benicia, California. It's one of our flagship training facilities. So they're always open for people to take a tour, to come look at them. I wish they would, because that's the beginning. Many mm-hmm. fine iron workers have come through these apprenticeship programs that had nothing, just like I did. I had nothing. Mm-hmm. But today, I'm really blessed to have all the opportunities that I did and challenges to do better and to help others. And so it's been a great run. It really, really has.
Well, you've done a lot. You've seen a lot. And now you're the executive director of safety and health for the International. Talk to me about, I guess, some things have changed regarding certification. And this just came a couple of weeks ago from your president, Eric Dean. And that is so important. You know, we all know how dangerous construction can be, especially in a high rise for an iron worker. Talk to me about what's happened here. What changed here in the last month as far as certification goes?
Well, our general president, Eric Dean, commissioned a lot of new safety and health programs. And he and our executive officers, they give us the resources to do what we need to do in the safety department. One of the biggest issues in the workplace, as you mentioned, are certifications. Unfortunately, there are many, many organizations that sell certifications that really aren't worth the paper they're written on. You have to have a certification for this, a certification for that. But really, many of these certifications are not industry specific. They're kind of a one shoe fits all.
Uh-huh.
But when you do structural steel high rise work and you do iron working, your certifications better be very specific to the work that we do. And so we recognize that many of our incidents that we've had around the country were related to the failure of our supervisors are foremen in the workplace to really understand their roles and responsibilities as a foreman or supervisor in the workplace. And it's taken on a whole new role. So our organization is developing the very first iron worker safety certification program that it will be accredited by the International Accreditation Services. They work in 19 countries. They provide third-party certifications. They verify what you're doing, and they stand behind it. So we are developing that for our workforce, for our contractors to know that if we send an iron worker out there and he has this particular safety certification, it's no different than a board-certified surgeon. You can rest assured that surgeon knows what he or she is doing. It's no different than the iron worker safety certification course that we're developing right now that we are looking to roll out in October of this year. But what's another important part of this, and this is important for all your listeners out there, your foreman, whether they're iron workers, carpenters, laborers, whoever they are, if they are in a foreman role, they are not considered to be a union worker. They are considered to be a company management representative. So from a legal perspective, from OSHA and also the National Labor Relations Board, they don't see you as just an iron worker out of local 17 iron workers. okay? They see you as a company management representative, and you have a series of roles and responsibilities that are far above the regular field hand. Unfortunately, our members have not realized that, as well as many of our contractors, until the big one happens. A serious incident happens. Maybe it's a fatality or a disabling injury. But when the depositions are taken, they find out who's that supervisor, and did he or she understand their roles and responsibilities for the people that were underneath their supervision. So that's where this course is going. From the time that load of iron shows up to the job site until the last iron worker walks off, what are those common iron worker attack activities that occur? And the foremen that are running these different gangs, what should we tell them about their roles and responsibilities to deal with these common hazards? So this is the very first, we are the very first trade union to develop a specific certification course for supervisors to understand the safety and health roles and responsibilities. So it's a big, big initiative, big program for us to be rolling out this year.
And you indicated it should be ready come October of this year?
Yes.
Is that what I heard?
Yes. Yes.
Good, good, good. That's fantastic. Steve, you know what? Let's take a break. I'm sure by now there's been discussion as to the components of that certification program. And this is going to be changing as it goes, I'm sure. But let's touch on that. This is fascinating. And I'm sure other trades will follow once you get this done, because this is going to be specific to the iron workers. Good stuff. Steve Rank is his name. He is the Executive Director of Safety and Health for the Iron Workers. Ironworkers.org is their website. And by the way, mention Local 17. That's where we originate this show, in Cleveland, Ohio. Iron Workers Local 17. Also, Tom Jermuska Jr. will be joining us on behalf of the Labor Citizen. He's going to preview 2021, the outlook for construction. It's all part of America's workforce. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Nurses, doctors, and caregivers at the VA are under attack. They face hostile management, callous agency heads, and an administration that's stomping all over their ability to speak up for our veterans. Unions are even being kicked out of their offices, a direct attempt to silence the voice of VA employees. When VA workers are under attack, veterans pay the price. Costly privatization and outsourcing will run rampant, meaning fewer services and worse quality of care for our nation's heroes. It's time to stand up for the workers who care for our veterans. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers. Standing strong and fighting for what's right.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, as well as Google Podcasts. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Steve Rank. Steve is Executive Director of Safety and Health for the Iron Workers. We're talking about safety certification for supervisors. We all know how dangerous construction work is, especially for iron workers. You got the high rises. There's a lot of training. I know they go over that in apprenticeship programs, but there's always accidents, and those accidents end up in very, very lengthy court cases. Steve, and I'm sure you were involved in some of those over the years, but you're mentioning in the first segment about this specific certification for iron workers that's going to be rolled out probably around October. Eric Dean, your president, announced this a couple of weeks ago. What do we know about it right now? I mean, is this going to be like you like a course that people have to go to? Who's involved? Tell me what you know right now, Steve.
Well, unfortunately, because of the COVID-19 pandemic, we have to move this course from an in-person to an online study guide. So you would be able to go on and study sample tests, sample questions, view pictures of common hazards, and you would be asked, what is the common hazard in this photograph? If you're ruffling deck or shaking out iron, common activities, what is the hazard that you as a supervisor identify in this photograph? So we want this to be a competency-based certification. So each member that elects to take this will have to recognize the hazard, and they will have to also check the box on the proper course of action on how to correct the hazard. And the first element of this program is teaching the iron workers what are their roles and responsibilities of supervisors in the workplace. What has OSHA determined to be your roles and responsibilities in a court of law? What about the National Labor Relations Board? Over three decades of court cases, they have identified 11 activities that if you as a supervisor or foreman, if you perform one of these 11, you are considered a supervisor that is acting on behalf of the employer. Do you hire? Do you fire? Do you transfer workers from one place in the job to the other? Do you resolve problems? Okay. Do you act as a liaison between the steel fabricator and the guys in the field when things aren't wrong? These are just some of the activities, but if you do one of these, that iron worker foreman is considered to be a supervisor or a company management representative. But unfortunately, they've never understood this until the big incident has happened. And then they get questioned. They get interviewed by someone from OSHA or some other party. The first thing they're going to be asked is, who's the supervisor on this project? Why? Mm-hmm. Because there's a series of questions that they're going to ask to establish whether this person was, in fact, the supervisor, the foreman, and had control over the area, the work area, and had supervisory responsibilities of the people working in their gang, okay, or working in their place in the job. So part one would be is getting them to understand this from a regulatory and legal standpoint, what the roles and responsibilities are. This is not designed to scare them away. This is designed to educate them, to give them confidence that when they go on a job and they see a hazard, how are they going to respond? Mm-hmm. That's the decision block we're trying to drive them to. Second is, what are the common situations that they're going to run into with a project owner or a general contractor? There's many times other parties create hazards for the iron workers. Other trades, other parties on the job site are doing things or not doing things that are causing us hazards. So what would our foreman, how would they respond in that situation? Then we take it from general, we take it to very specific. We put you in the driver's seat as a raising gang foreman, a bolt-up foreman, a decking foreman, a welding foreman, and then we start showing 200 or 300 photographs to break it down to say, here's a common situation in the workplace. You're the foreman. You're the supervisor. Identify the hazard and identify the corrective action that you must take. So that's just three of the major components of this. The fourth would be sample written tests that we have to give examinations. So all this will be online. they can study for it, and then we're going to develop a protocol for them taking the written examination. We haven't decided whether they're going to come into their training facilities to take it, or if there's a way they can take it online, like many other organizations are doing now, because of the restrictions and the restraints coming from the COVID-19 pandemic. But one way or the other, we're going to roll this out by October of this year. And yes, we will be the very first trade union to have a specific certification for our foremen or supervisors in the workplace. We had to get away from these some of these safety certifications offered by organizations. Why? They're too generic. They're not specific to the hazards and the work that the iron workers do. And unfortunately, it gave us a false sense of security. It gave our foremen and our contractors that hire them a very false sense of security. Well, Billy's got a safety certification. He should have known. Mm-hmm. Well, if you look at that a little bit more deep, that certification was so general that it never, ever talked about floor openings. It didn't talk about wall openings. It didn't talk about impalement hazards, working in proximity to power lines when you're working with cranes and hoisting equipment. So there are many, many situations that we're going to have to address that are industry specific that sets us apart, far apart from these generic certifications that some organizations are selling out there across the country. I don't question their heart that they want to prevent incidents. That's not the issue. What I do question is the depth and the discretion and the content of some of these certification programs that they seriously miss the mark. They do not address the hazards in our trade that a supervisor needs to know. And that's where we're going with this program under the direction and the oversight of our General President Eric Dean and the trustees. That's where we want to take this. Why? Because we want to show measurable results. After a year or two, we want to see these incident trends of supervisors turning their head or not knowing how to respond are now correcting hazards in the workplace because they're confident that they know what to do.
Yeah.
So that's our goal and objective here, is to achieve measurable results by focusing on the people that have control and custody of workers working in their gang. And that's where we're going to go with this.
Steve, how do you feel about doing this virtually? Having an instructor, the classroom, you know that there is a difference there. And we're talking about taking this to the next level. Do you feel confident? And does Eric Dean feel confident? Obviously, he's being very aggressive on this. But what's the answer there?
Well, I'm glad you used the word virtual because many organizations are having to do virtual training. I know that our training department that's headed up by Lee Worley, he's the executive director for the Ironworkers National Training Fund. As we speak, every day they're offering qualified and certified rigor programs. They're offering all kinds of programs virtually. And yes, you can see the students can see you. They can ask questions. It's much like you're sitting at your kitchen table, okay? Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I get to learn from the training department's experience in Lee Worley, what he's done with his training facility, 157 of them in North America. They're doing virtual training and distance learning. We have people in remote areas and Big Sky country in Montana, Wyoming, places where it would take him 5 hours to drive to a training center. So he's been dealing with this for a long time, distance learning, virtual learning, online learning, and it's working. It is absolutely working. So we'll get beyond the restraints of whether it's virtual, whether it's online. But we'll guarantee at the end of the day, people will understand the subject matter. And hopefully our goal is to ensure that our supervisors understand their roles and responsibilities, and the contractors understand if they hire them, that they're going to know how to react when they get into job sites. And there are serious hazards there in the workplace.
Steve, I can only imagine other trades are going to say, hey, you know what? I want to check this out myself. So it's cool that the iron workers are taking the lead on this. Have any other trades saying, hey, you know, we're, share some of this with us. What are you hearing?
Well, we report on this at different forums and different meetings, and they all think it's great. The owner reps, whether you're with General Motors, whether you're with some of these big owner reps, they love it because they know that these supervisors are in a position to make a difference, to keep an eye on those first or third year apprentices. You know, it takes a journeyman. It takes someone with experience to see when there's an unsafe act or an unsafe condition occurring in the workplace. So yes, we have had a lot of interest by other trades doing this. I think every trade should have an industry-specific certification. We're really fortunate that the International Accreditation Services that we're working with, they're going to accredit our written program, and they're also going to provide certifications, third-party certifications. After each member completes this course, a third-party entity will issue a certification, and they'll be in our database. And rest assured, with the development team that we got working on this, they will be able to recognize and identify and avoid these type of hazards in the workplace.
That's what it's all about. Steve, I'm going to let you go. Let's do something with Eric Dean. Maybe I know you work closely with him. Eric, of course, is president of the Iron Workers International. We could talk more about this. This is great stuff. Again, I always call this the union difference. Unions make a difference in so many ways, and that this is a prime example of that. It really is. So, my friend, you take care. Be safe. Happy New Year to you and all the iron workers. And on behalf of Local 17 here in Cleveland, Ohio, we're all excited about this, all related to the members here, as soon as I get done with this show. So you take care, my friend. We'll talk to you down the road, all right?
Thank you for all you do, and go Brown. So we want to see him go to the top this year.
I hear you. We're all excited. Okay. Steve Rank on our live line. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tom Jermuska Jr., editor of the Labor Citizen, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as healthcare and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. And welcome back to the show. Haven't had him on for a while. Tom Jermuska Jr., editor of the Labor Citizen, produced by BMA Media, which produces this show we call America's Workforce. And he's here to take a look at how 2021 is going to look like for unions, organized labor in general, and specifically the construction industry. Hey, Tommy, happy New Year to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Fletch. Same to you and to all the listeners out there. I think I can speak for everyone. We're all hoping 2021 can just be a little better than 2020. We'll set the bar low, and then we'll go from there.
I think everybody's in the same camp on that one, no doubt about that. You know, the game changer here, you know how politics, how important that is. You got that special election in Atlanta. Just wondering your thoughts on that, especially with the Biden administration, the fact that this could change control of the Senate. What's your angle on that right now, Tommy?
Fletch, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think as you look to 2021 and beyond, for organized labor in general, it's already better. The election and the bring in of the Biden administration, it's going to help. But clearly, whenever they finish counting the votes in Georgia and we determine what party has control of the Senate, that could really swing this even further. It helps pass legislation that will be pro-union, pro-organized labor, try and undo many things that have been done for the last few years. So all eyes, as people on the show have been saying for weeks, we're looking at Georgia whenever they get that figured out. But just in general right now, you know, it's a cliche statement, but unions in general, they do have a seat at the table right now. And that's really important. That's where it all begins. The Biden administration has put a number of union representatives from the trades, from people like the Teamsters, Teachers Union, all those, you know, AFL-CIO, they are all over all these different committees that are part of the transition teams. It includes on the primary, the top tier administration transition team is Lonnie Stevenson, general president of the IBEW. There's only 12 people on that committee, and he's one of them. So that's a real positive, that the input and the interest and the needs are being discussed at this foundational level really is a positive going forward for the next few years. But as you said, it really could be a game changer depending on the votes and how they come out in Georgia for those two Senate seats.
Yeah, if they win both seats, Rich Trumka, president of the Labor Federation, has said this numerous times. The first thing they're going to go after is the PRO Act, and that's to protect the right to organize. That could be huge, huge win for labor. So we can only hope. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Let's take a look at the outlook for the construction industry. What's the game plan right now for workers? And I know it's tough because we're still in this pandemic. What are you hearing?
Fletcher, you're exactly right. We at the Labor Citizen, every year we open our January edition with trying to talk to as many people as we can, trying to forecast what the upcoming year looks like for the union construction trade industry across the country. And you're exactly right. I think right now it's hold on and hope. There is a lot of work out there. Some of it got slowed down in 2020 by the craziness, the pandemic, all the uncertainty. So some of that work's still there, and there's at least breath of optimism that that's going to continue in 2021. Obviously, the hope is that at some point here in the first half of the year, we get past this and we really start to roll the economy. If the economy can get back to whatever it was, the construction trades will soon follow. The last factor, getting back to our previous conversation, the other thing that's increasing that optimism is the belief that we're really going to have a solid and an actual increase in spending for infrastructure across the country. And infrastructure is going to mean a lot more. It's not just roads. Roads are important, but we're talking about the power grid. We're talking about telecommunication, communications in general, fiber optics, energy output, all those things really will prime the pump for the trades. And it trickles throughout the trades as all that spending, all that government money input into all these different type of infrastructure projects, it raises, you know, it's the rising tide raises all the ships in this industry. So there's definitely a lot of excitement about the realistic possibility. Regardless of the outcome of the Senate majority, there's a general belief that everyone can come to some agreement, maybe not exactly the right dollar amount, but that we are going to focus on infrastructure work. Definitely a big plus and a feather in the cap for the trades, and one they're absolutely looking at. A lot of the associations are really putting a high priority on that stuff.
I'm glad you pointed that out about the infrastructure. It's not just roads and bridges. It's our water systems, our power grid, telecommunications, energy. I mean, there's so many components to our infrastructure that need to be addressed. All right, one more issue here, and that's safety on the job. And the numbers do not look good. And I guess the Labor Citizen has a story on this for, 2019? What do we know right now, Tom?
You got it, Flash. Unfortunately, I don't want to end on too much. We were going positive there for a minute, but unfortunately, this is not good news. The Bureau of Labor Statistics every year puts out a national census of deaths on the job site, fatal occupational industries.
Right.
They're a year behind. You got to remember that. So this is looking at the 2019 year compared to 2018. And unfortunately, for the construction industry, the numbers went up for the first time since 2007. They went up 5%. We're talking over 1,000 fatal injuries during the year. Definitely not a good thing. And these are real numbers that the industry does look at and they pay attention to. They break it down to a certain degree, but they don't break it down union, non-union. The general belief is a lot of these deaths happen on non-union jobs where training is lower, commitment to safety is there, but we don't have actual statistics about that. Slips and falls is almost always the highest number. For some reason, this year's study didn't give that specifically for the occupation of construction, but it's still very high across the board. And we know it's definitely up there. It breaks it down in a couple other ways. Why is this happening, Flash? Why the change? There's one topic that was spoken about, and there was another that was whispered about. The one that was spoken about was the increase in actual construction workers on the job. New people, not as experienced, less training, less familiarity with being on the job can lead to more accidents. And it's not just accidents to that untrained worker. It could be a domino effect where something they do leads to someone else's death, where it's a slip or a fall, touching the wrong thing on a job site that causes a fatality, even driving equipment around job sites and accidents that way. All those things were definitely believed to be part of the problem. Flash, the other one that no one's saying out loud, at least not yet, was, as we know, over the past 4 years, there was a lot less money put into OSHA and things related to job site inspections. There's just not as many inspections at job sites, so things are being missed. People are not, if they're given the opportunity, some contractors just aren't putting the time and energy and money into making sure job sites are as safe as possible. So that one's out there as well. Looking ahead, Flash, obviously these numbers are really going to be messed up as we get farther ahead because it's unclear how they're going to count pandemic-related information, deaths due to COVID, into something like this. It's going to be hard because you could be a construction worker and die of COVID, but being able to prove you caught it on the job site and then meaning that you might have died because you were at the job site, it's going to be real cloudy and muddy. So it'll be interesting to see how they address that. We don't know yet. But for now, I think the definite message is commitment, recommitment to safety, trying to turn this tide after what was real positive numbers for a number of years. We're hoping this is a blip, but it could be a year or two before we see that fixed.
Yeah, it'll be interesting how they break down the numbers for 2020 because you got healthcare, the transit workers, the meat packers. I mean, so many in those occupations passed away due to COVID. Hopefully with the Biden administration, too, they can trick up OSHA here and make sure that job sites are a whole lot safer. And again, it's the union difference, as you indicated. I am willing to bet, and that's a darn good bet, that when you have a union workforce versus a non-union workforce, you're going to have less injuries on the job. That goes pretty much without saying.
Flash, I think you're absolutely right. The general rule is any injury on the job is one too many. Any death is absolutely one too many.
All right, we're going to leave it on that note. Hopefully things will get better. You take care, be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road, my friend, all right?
Thanks very much, Flash.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Ohio AFL-CIO and the Alliance for American Manufacturing. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.